Hello and welcome. It is Your Money. I hope you're having a wonderful day. I'm Susie Jones along with Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb, and it is Your Money. So let me properly introduce them. Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and senior vice president. Actually, he's not both. He's the founder of Wealth Enhancement and a financial advisor. Peg Webb is the senior vice president and financial advisor. Welcome to both of you. Hope you have a good holiday, both of you recovering from Thanksgiving.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce. Yes, I'm fully recovered.
Good morning, Peg. Good morning, Susie Jones. Thank you. I hope you ladies and I hope all listeners had a great Thanksgiving. Susie and Peg, you know, Thanksgiving, we just went through it, and it's a natural segue to what we want to talk about today. Susie and listeners, Peg and I last week talked about spending during the holidays and staying within a budget and spending without guilt and without regret, without remorse. And we purposely did not talk about charitable giving last week because we knew we were going to focus on it this week. This is a time of year where those people that have the economic wherewithal tend to do their charitable giving to help those in need, to help others. And today we're going to talk about good ways to do that, good ways to do that efficiently and effectively so you can help the cause that you care about the most, or the causes, plural, and ways to do that where maybe there's some economic benefit for you as the giver, although I know that's not the primary motivation for most people. If you can also get a tax advantage for your generosity, why not do that? So we joined, asked to join us today, Andrew Thielander. Andrew's been on the show before. He's a financial advisor in Minnesota, and he's a specialist in philanthropic planning. Andrew, I can't believe this. You've been with Wealth Enhancement since 2007. I saw that when I was preparing this morning, and it shocked me that it's been that many years that we've known each other. Andrew has an MBA from Augsburg, an undergraduate from St. Scholastica. He lives in Stillwater, and he practices what he preaches. He currently serves on the board of directors at Gillette Children's and on the Board of Education for Stillwater Area Schools. He gives back to his community people, and he helps clients do that also. Andrew, thanks for joining us this morning on this very important topic near and dear to a lot of people's hearts.
Thank you. It's great to be with you both this morning.
So, Andrew, I 2007, I can't believe that's 18 years ago. That's when you and I first met. Thanks for being on the show. Maybe you could lead off with some thoughts about how our listeners can make these charitable giving, maybe yet this year. I understand that there's a lot of change that happened with the tax law this year. And so just trying to be strategic and impactful, let's lead with giving the listeners some ideas.
Of course, yeah. Excited to be here and talk about something near and dear to my heart. But yeah, I think when people are asked to give money to a cause or are trying to decide on how to make more of a difference with their charitable giving, they sometimes can get stuck. So today, I thought it would be helpful to offer seven simple ways to get unstuck and really to amp up your giving for this year and next year and beyond. So just to kind of start off with, what I think is kind of most important is just to start with your values. So what I mean by that is to focus on where it matters. And that can be done by, you know, looking at and figuring out what causes matter most to you, and then to understand how can your values help drive the greatest amount of impact. A really great best practice, you know, especially as an individual or even as a family, is to create a brief charitable mission statement to help keep your giving focused. And so how that can work is I think it's important to be strategic in your giving, and that can be done by concentrating your giving, which can produce some more meaningful results. Plus, I think it also keeps you off of some of those donation mailing lists that you would otherwise be on. And as a part of that, I think we want to be very mindful of the new federal legislation, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which has increased standard deductions beginning in 2026 And so it's important to become even more thoughtful around some of your charitable giving strategies. Peg?
Hey, Andrew, we'll dig a little... Oh, I'm sorry. We're all talking at once. My fault. Hey, we'll dig deeper into some of the ways to get tax benefits. But, Andrew, I want to just comment on the very first point. We talk on this program, Peg and I, all the time about everything we do with clients starts with core values. What's important to you? What are you trying to accomplish? And what a great point to make that that's also true of your charitable giving. I'm going to use myself as the example here. If you don't have a plan, if you don't know what's important to you, what charity or charities do you want to focus on, it's easy to get caught up. I'm somebody that if I get a lot of, like you said, Andrew, I get a lot of invitations in the mail to give to a lot of things and personal things and calls or walking by the bell ringer, going to the grocery store. If I don't do something, I feel guilty and I'm like, are you a selfish jerk? But then I have to stop and realize I have a plan of things I do and places where I give. It doesn't make me a jerk if I walk by the bell ringer and I don't put something in the bucket. So I think talking about that first, what causes do you want to help, is really important for people to recognize, Andrew. That's a great first point.
No, absolutely. I agree, and thank you. So, and I kind of mentioned the new federal legislation that came into effect with the big, beautiful bill and how some of the charitable giving provisions that people should be mindful of. So a lot of these charitable giving changes do take effect in the 2026 tax year. And really where you're seeing it, some of that is above the line, where some of the universal charitable deductions for non-itemizers really can go into effect. As well as, you know, the 35% maximum tax benefit for deductions claimed by the top bracket earners is also something to be mindful of. So an action step, I think, for anyone, any of the tax brackets, is to accelerate your gifts to 2025 to take advantage of the current marginal rate before the new cap goes into effect for 2026. Also, there's some new floor deductions for individuals and corporations where you're seeing some increases to that. So again, another action step just to be mindful of is just to consider the timing and the amounts of your giving and maybe look to kind of group together some of your giving or look to make larger, less frequent gifts that can make for a more sensible and coordinated strategy of giving.
You know, Andrew, when I looked at this outline, there's a lot of details about this 2026. But what I got out of the outline, and I haven't focused on this too much yet this year, and I only have 1 month, and so do the listeners. This is a big deal. 2025, you'll probably get more bang for your buck. You're going to give to charity anyway, but you'll get more bang for your buck if you put that in 2025. And there's a couple examples on here on our outline. If you could maybe walk through those for the high-income people and then other people below the highest tax rates, how that would be impactful 2025 versus 2026.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in looking at some of those details, I mentioned the above-the-line charitable deductions for non-itemizers. So some of those non-itemizers can now once again deduct cash donations to charity, which is a nice benefit even if you are using the standard deduction. And so that could be up to $1,000 for a single household or up to $2,000 for a married filing jointly tax filers. It's important to note, though, that these above-the-line deductions are not applicable if you're giving from a donor advised fund or through private foundations. So it's something important to keep in mind. Also, you mentioned some of the higher income earners. You know, an example would be as a high income earner that's making a $1,000 deduction would receive a $350 deduction instead of the current $370. So not a huge difference, but still some extra deductions that you can take advantage of still for 2025. And so, again, to your point, Peg, I think it's a great reason to look to accelerate your gifting in 2025. And then, you know, you can plan accordingly for next year. But it's a great opportunity, and definitely you still have a little bit of a runway to make those determinations of how you can make the greatest impact, both by doing some good in the world through your charitable giving, but also saving on taxes to boot.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the giving, you know, giving regardless of what's around us as far as tax deductions. But we feel like if it is possible to get a deduction, and a lot of clients are asking us for our advice, you know, are you meeting, we want to give the money, but we also want to get the deduction. Also, there's some extensions to the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Can you just kind of quickly go through those, so that people are aware of what is still in place?
Yes, absolutely. So there was extensions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That was some federal legislation that went into effect in 2017. Some of the main areas of emphasis within that we are most familiar with are the current income brackets. And those have been made permanent. And so that's a 10%, 12%, 22%, 24%, all the way up to 37% that those federal tax brackets can fall within. So it's great to have some clarity around what that will look like, especially as clients are looking to maybe do different types of strategies within their own situation. Also, as part of that extension is the higher standard deductions. And that does have a direct impact on potentially a household's ability to itemize deductions. And so for 2025, the standard deduction did increase to $15,750 for a single filer, and all the way up to $31,500 for married filing jointly. And the good news is those future amounts are indexed to inflation, so you should see those increase every year, including in 2026.
So there's a couple other things. Yeah, there's a couple other things that happened. The state and local tax deduction. That's kind of a big deal, because if people can itemize and they are able to take $40,000 off of their income, it used to be 10,000. And so you got to follow the rules, et cetera, et cetera. But there's that alone may increase the number of filers who itemize. And so let's carry this through. And for those people that actually can itemize, I know there's a lot of things you could do on the front page, but many, many people, including our clients, have not itemized for a long time because it was just hard to get above the standard deductions. Can you talk just a little bit about this new kind of group of people that will probably be motivated to take more off of their itemization versus just the front page?
Great point, Peg. Absolutely. There's some notable provisions that you had referenced as part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So the SALT, which is an acronym for state and local tax deductions, did increase to around $40,000 with income-based phase-outs, of course. And so this may increase the number of filers who might be able to itemize because of the increased caps of these state and local tax deductions. Another important part is tax deductions to organizations that provide school vouchers. And so in 2027, a tax credit of up to $1,700 per taxpayer will be available for tax for donations to organizations that either grant scholarships to private or religious K-12 schools. One other part I wanted to mention around this legislation is the federal estate and gift tax exemptions. Those are increasing to a pretty substantial number for 2026, all the way up to $15 million. And so really the implication, I think, for everyone at any level is that the majority of the estates, I would say probably over 99%, will not be subject to the federal estate tax. So what that would mean for people is that the lifetime charitable giving in your lifetime should and it would be the primary mechanism by which most people can receive a charitable deduction in their lifetime.
If you joined us late and you're a regular listener to the show and you're hearing a voice that you don't recognize, this is Andrew Thielander. Andrew's a financial advisor in our St. Croix, Minnesota office, and he's a specialist on charitable giving. He does it in his own life. He coaches clients how to do it. So we're focusing on wise charitable giving strategies today. We've already talked a little bit about starting with what's important to you, your core values, maybe even creating a charitable, personal charitable mission statement to keep your giving focused and concentrated. And then we've gotten into some of the specific strategies of how maybe there can be some tax benefit to you for your generosity. Peg, I'll hand it back to you to lead Andrew where you want to take him.
Yeah, one of the things that I've witnessed and helped clients with over the years is if you're gainfully employed, your employer probably has opportunities of a match. So I truly have been taking advantage of that. Can you go over that, Andrew?
Yes, absolutely. I think many employers are finding ways to encourage their employees to do good in the world as well, not just through their, you know, products or services they may offer, but also through a charitable giving match. As an example, Wealth Enhancement has done this for many years, where we can nominate or pick a charity to give to and help support that. And then if you're able to get a match from the employer, I mean, what a great incentive to essentially boost or if not double the giving that you're doing. So I think it's important if you're not aware of one with your employer to ask about it and find ways that maybe they can participate and help to focus on, you know, strengthening the giving that you're doing to the charities that are most important to you. And so as part of that within the employer opportunities, you know, the new federal legislation with the Big Beautiful Bill Act, you know, does not alter any of the matching rules directly. But, you know, the timing of gifts can be increasingly important to make sure that those are being received within each calendar year to make sure that it's properly accounted for.
Another one that is a big way and a great way to give is the last 5 years. Let's just take the S&P 500. It is up 75-80% in those 5 years. So what you can do is donate this appreciated stock. Talk about that a little bit.
Yes, that is really a way of smarter ways to give financially is how I would kind of deem that. You know, donating appreciated stock, especially, you know, so that means something that you had bought and it has increased pretty significantly in value. You rather than maybe looking to sell it and get that tax hit, you can instead donate that appreciated stock to a charity. So that could be a really highly tax-efficient strategy that you get the tax deduction based on the full current value, and then the charity is able to sell that stock and realize 100% of the proceeds without any tax consequences. And so it's really important, though, if you're doing that, is that you want to avoid, when you're doing this, avoid selling that stock first and then donating with cash. So, again, you want to make sure that you do not sell it. You instead gift that appreciated stock to charity. And then you can work with your financial advisor, such as through Wealth Enhancement or whomever, or the charity themselves to make sure that they can properly receive that that stock that you're gifting to them.
And Andrew,
Go ahead, Bruce.
Go ahead, Pig. Sorry.
I was just going to say, and let's tie that to donor advised funds, because I think with what I just talked about, the S&P being so dramatic, maybe you don't want to give, you know, all of your next 5 years, but here's a way that you could gift in one tax year, open a donor advised fund, put that stock in there, and then give that stock over a lifetime, you know, the value of it. I know we don't have a lot of time, but Andrew?
Absolutely. I think the donor advised fund is another really great strategy that we're seeing a lot of clients take advantage of, and they have increased in popularity quite a bit. And that's where you can make a one-time large gift of a appreciated security, get the full tax deduction in that tax year, and now that the funds are inside of that donor advised fund, now you can make charitable giving out of that account, whether it's this year or moving forward, without any issues. So it could be a really great way of kind of coupling the tax donation along with some increased giving flexibility, where maybe you don't want to give all that stock at once. You can instead give it into the donor advised fund, then allows you to give as needed over time.
Susie, when we come back from break, we'll finish our discussion on tax-wise charitable giving strategies, but we'll definitely make time to get the listener involved as well.
All right, that sounds like a wonderful idea. If you are listening and you have a question for our guests, 651-461-9226. We are already getting some questions coming in, so if you're on the sidelines right now and you have a question about charitable giving, 651-461-9226. We're back after this quick. And welcome back. It is the second half of Your Money. Once again, Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb. Bruce, the founder of Wealth Enhancement, Peg Webb, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor. Welcome back to both of you. Do you want to reintroduce our special guest this week, Bruce? And then we have a phone call. So jump in.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, thank you, Susie Jones. Andrew Thielander was kind enough to join us today to help us in our discussion on tax-wise charitable giving strategies. Andrew's been, Peg and I both are shocked by this. Andrew's been with Wealth Enhancement since 2007. Peg, we've kind of watched Andrew grow up right before our very eyes.
We have.
And the first half of the show, we talked a little bit about, in terms of your charitable giving, to start with your core values, what's important to you, maybe have a personal charitable mission statement. We went into some specific strategies and some of the changes in tax law, part of the what's new in 2026 with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And then we got into some specifics. We talked a little bit about using your employer opportunities, if available, ways to get a deduction. We talked a little bit about donor advised funds. Again, really quickly, Andrew Thielander, again, is an advisor with Wealth Enhancement. He's in Minnesota in one of our offices in the East Metro, the St. Croix office. And again, in his personal life, beyond being a financial advisor, Andrew's on the board of directors of Gillette Children's and also on the board of education for the Stillwater area public schools where he lives. He's a good guy. He's a good guy to lead this discussion on charitable giving. There's a couple more points, Andrew, I know you wanted to get to, but let's take a caller while we've got them and let them ask their question, Susie.
All right, perfect. We have Ron calling this morning from New Ulm, Minnesota. Good morning, Ron. You're on with Peg, Bruce, and Andrew.
Thank you. We have a parochial Catholic school in town here, and they have a script program where you buy gift cards from various businesses, and then the business will give back like 5%, and the school gets one half, and the other half of that 5% goes into the student's tuition against their tuition plan. And they have Adopt a Student also, where people can adopt a student and donate money towards their tuition bill and to help them out. Are either one of those tax deductible?
Hey, Ron, thanks for listening, and thanks for the great question. I know New Ulm well. I've had the ribs at the Kaiserhof many times in my life. But and I think I know the school you're referencing also. Andrew Pegg, can you help Ron out?
Andrew?
Yeah, I'd be happy to kind of jump into that. Great question. So there's a lot of different ways to help support some of these different initiatives, especially when there's school fundraisers. Whether or not it's deductible would depend on whether any gifts or services were provided in lieu of your gift. So if you made a gift and you got a gift card, you know, that would be considered probably something that you got in return, which may make that deduction not eligible, versus if you just gave directly to the school, you know, or any type of organization that's a 501c3, then you would likely then be able to get that tax deduction, again, assuming that no gifts or services were provided in return.
In a lot of cases, too, though, is let's say it's $100 and you want to give $100 to the school and they give you a gift card, but the gift card might be $20. So then that $80 that is left is deductible. I feel like the gift card is kind of a little bit of a lure, you know, to say, oh, I get something for giving, but yet it's a strategy that works. And the only thing you cannot do is deduct if you get something. And that includes even like a little toy that sometimes the charities will give out or just something that's small. You do need to deduct that before you put that on your taxes.
Great point, Peg.
All right. Do you guys want to jump in and go back to some of the things you missed, or do you want to take some more questions at 651-461-9226? Bruce?
Yeah. A couple more things we should probably hit, Peg.
Okay. So one of the things I wanted to mention really quickly is going back to that appreciated stock, because we have a month here and the markets are really good. But if you have appreciated stock, I talked about I utilize this donor advised fund. And I wanted to mention is one of the strategies that I use with my clients and have for years, and actually use it myself, is count how many years before you have a required minimum distribution. And why do I say that? It's because if you put that stock in and you figure, oh, that's 5 years or 10 years before I can use my IRA money to give to charity, that may be a calculation that you do now and take advantage of 2025 deduction and have all those years worth of your giving in one tax year. Now, it might be that next year you'd have a high income because some event happened. You know, you need to think about those things. Number one, work with your financial advisor. Andrew is a specialist in it and actually helps all of us, you know, create tax strategies around charities. So I just wanted to mention that, Andrew, and we have a couple more that we want to get to.
Yes, no, that's a great point again, Peg. You know, just to kind of touch upon those donor advised funds again, you know, to your point, that remains really helpful in being able to kind of separate some of those deduction timings from the giving timing, especially if you're looking ahead of some opportunities to be giving within a multi-year type of plan of action. And so as you're looking to make maybe some multi-year commitments to help charities plan more effectively, maybe that's through a pledge through the charitable entity that you're working with, it can be really helpful for their planning purposes, but also for your own planning purposes of how much should you be funding into this donor advised fund, or how much stock should you be looking to allocate for this purpose as you then get closer to RMD age, or maybe even looking to start up qualified charitable distributions, which can start actually before your RMD's age at 70 and a half. And so with some of the new federal legislation, you know, those have changed the deduction environment, which does make those strategic timing even more important and valuable as you're looking to kind of maximize your gift.
The only other thing I would add there, too, is I've had a lot of clients add family members to the Donor Advice Fund as far as recommendations. A lot of time your children or even your grandchildren have charities that they love that if you do have a Donor Advice Fund, you can always go to that fund and then say, oh, I'd like my granddaughter, you know, to give, or I want my daughter or son to give. It's just a great strategy. Andrew, how about just a couple closing action steps for listeners?
And I love that point, Peg. I think that's a great way of getting kids and grandkids involved, and definitely something I would encourage clients to do as well, to make that even more meaningful and to help future generations better understand, you know, the importance of charitable giving. And so that can be done both through kind of volunteering together or just different types of community involvement. Some of the closing action steps that I think is important for takeaways for people to remember is that first, let's kind of, you know, reevaluate your charitable mission for the coming years. So sit down, be intentional about figuring out what's most important to you. How can you be more strategic around maybe giving more meaningful gifts to some charities that are most important to you? But then also then, with about a month left of this calendar year, is to consider some of the year-end gifts, especially if you are still able to itemize for 2025. And then looking to next year, maybe you'll be only able to use the standard deduction. So, again, be really important about taking some time to figure out what ways you can maximize your gifts for this year. And with the market having appreciated as well as it has, you know, take a look at some of those appreciated assets for potential donations. And that would be in your non-retirement accounts that have had some significant growth, and figure out maybe there's some things that you can either fund the Donor Advice Fund or give some stock shares directly to a charity. And then overall, just work with a tax professional, a financial advisor, to help kind of coordinate your charitable strategies to incorporate more broad tax, retirement, and other type of estate planning considerations that are most applicable to your situation.
Hey, Andrew, something you said there that really struck a nerve with me is, you know, maybe multi-generational, you volunteer and so forth. It occurs to me that a lot of people want to help, they want to give back, but maybe they don't have the economic wherewithal. They don't have money, but maybe they do have time. So maybe you go fill food bags. Maybe you go serve meals. Maybe, you know, you get involved in your community and you contribute that way by volunteering and participating. It doesn't have to be necessarily writing a check. And the other thing that occurred to me, Andrew, I know a lot of these organizations, and I've had a lot of clients over the years, the gift might be a future gift. And you talked about that, you know, a multi-year giving. Maybe they don't have money now, but they have a life insurance policy that they can name a charity the beneficiary or one of the beneficiaries of a life insurance policy. And I know those dollars don't go to the charity immediately, but a lot of the charities tell me that just having those pledges out there can help their present day giving, because the charity, you know, is proving that it's got staying power and it's got legs and it's going to be around for a while. Andrew, I'll give you the final word, and then Susie will let listeners take us home. And financial questions on this topic or any topic are fair game today. Andrew, last points?
Yes. Well, thank you both for having me today and letting me talk about something that I'm so passionate about. And Bruce, you mentioned some ways of you know, giving to some charities or some organizations that are important. And I think, you know, as important or as much as people want to be able to have some control, it does help the charities the most if you're able and willing to give unrestricted gifts that allows them the most maximum flexibility and to put your monies into action that will have the greatest impact. And so, you know, have those conversations with your charitable organizations and talk with your advisor of finding ways that you can maybe amp up your giving.
All right.
Awesome.
Yeah, 651-461-9226. That is the number to call if you have a question for Bruce, Peg, or for Andrew. This person texts in, I give money to PBS. The only thing I get in return is streaming PBS Passport. How can I calculate that as a deduction? Andrew?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Andrew, Peg, I hope you know the answer to this.
Yeah. And Peg had mentioned this before. If you are getting some services or goods in return, the charity themselves should be able to offer you or give you the amount that is tax deductible. Mm. So, for example, if you're getting $80 streaming service per year as a benefit for giving, let's say $250, then you should be able to. They should be able to break down the amount and say, okay, the gifts of the goods or services is $80, and you're now able to deduct, as in this example, $170. Mm-hmm. So I would just go back and ask the charitable organization that you're working with to see if they can provide some more specific information that you can then give to your tax preparer.
Okay, very good. I became a widow this year and know that my taxes will change dramatically. Any suggestions for me?
Well, first of all, to the texter, so sorry for your loss. Mm-hmm. And Peg, this is obviously not just a charitable giving question. And Andrew, it's a tax question. So I assume the texter, they had been filing return, married, filing jointly, I'm guessing, and that's going to change now. But if they lost their spouse this year, 2025 isn't really going to be much change, but 2026 could be a drastic change. Peg?
Yeah, I just want to clarify, Andrew is a financial advisor with Wealth Enhancer Group. Yes, he's very versed on being philanthropic, and just wanted to hand it over to Andrew because he's on the show, and let's hear from you first.
Yeah, so again, I'm very sorry for your loss to the person that texted in. The good news is that the IRS does have some clear rules around how this works. And so in the year of the death of a spouse, you can usually still file a joint return, even if they had passed away earlier in the year. Now, what happens then moving forward is, if you have some dependent children living with you, you can then file as a qualifying widow or widower with dependent child for up to 2 years after the year of death. But if you don't have a dependent child, then you would then start to file as a single starting the year after your spouse's death. But in that first year that, in the year of, you can still file a joint return.
All right. 651-461-9226. A texter wrote, would it help to limit the amount of Medicare that can tack on for an IRMA?
Andrew and Peg, are they talking about IRMA or Medicare Part B premiums? Do you understand the question, Andrew?
Yes, I believe they're talking about the income-related monthly adjustment amount, which is that extra charge that gets added to Medicare Part B and Part D premiums if your income is above a certain threshold. So I apologize. I wasn't sure what the question was.
It's not real clear. Another texter writes, this question, does a QCD reduce your taxable income only, or does it reduce MAGI? Thanks.
Okay, so Andrew, let me just tell the listeners what the jargon means.
Okay,
QCD,
good.
Yeah.
QCD, qualified charitable deduction or qualified charitable distribution, and then modified adjusted gross income.
Oh,
talk
goodness.
A little bit. This is really important, actually, and it's definitely relevant in terms of our topic today. Tax-wise charitable giving strategies. Talk about how that works, Andrew, for people that might not know. And I'll also throw in the acronym RMD, required minimum distribution. That's going to factor into this discussion also. Andrew?
There are a lot of fun acronyms that we get to work with, but I am a big fan of a qualified charitable distribution. I think that is a fantastic way to give to charity, especially when a person is having to take out those required minimum distributions. And so as you're looking to do that, it is important to understand that there is really no double tax benefit. So what I mean by that is because the QCD is excluded from income, meaning it is not included in your adjusted gross income, you cannot also claim it as a charitable deduction because you're already not having to pay taxes on that distribution because 100% of that QCD that goes to a 501c3 charity is excluded from your income. But at the same time, it does still match dollar for dollar your required minimum distribution for that year.
All right. Go ahead.
One other point on that is, and it's a big one, is, you know, the QCD, that deduction, goes off the front page of your return. And that actually can ripple for you favorably. And so even though we talk about it kind of disappearing and not showing up as income, it is a great ripple for paying less tax overall. And when they talked about modified adjusted gross income, it could be that that could save them from not going into that category, or you can have more deductions because you did the QCD versus just giving a charitable gift outright. I just wanted to add that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What about the standardized deduction? So, for example, that happens for me where I have X amount of dollars, and if I don't go over it, I just don't even give receipts. Is that changing as part of these tax changes as well, Jonathan? Andrew.
That's a great question, Susie. Andrew, and this is probably the last one we have time to answer, I'm guessing. Andrew?
So, starting in 2026, there are some new tax rules that will impact how non-itemizers can deduct small cash gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to some earlier points, as a single filer, you can do up to $1,000. For a joint filer, it's up to $2,000. So there are some changes that go into effect for 2026. And I think that's why it's maybe important if you are looking to maybe itemize still for 2025 to make sure maybe you try to group together some additional charitable contributions for this tax year so that you can most benefit from them, especially then if you're going into 2026, maybe you have to do the higher standard deduction that you may not get the full tax benefit of that charitable gift.
Okay.
Andrew Seelander, thank you for your time and your expertise today and helping us out. And Susie, I know we're near the end here.
We certainly are. Very good information for folks. And if you did not get your question answered, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE. Again, 1-888-6-ADVICE. Or you can always email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That's yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week. Break.